When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, Anna.
If country borders and grids can fascinate you, and state names intrigue you, if atlases, globes, city plans, subway maps, and of course, world maps are your thing, if you can name the capital city of Namibia, and if you get giddy about flags, you are in the right place. This is Map Corner, a podcast about the love of maps brought to you by Royfield Brown and Claire Asprey. Now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Yay. It's so good to see everybody on a British spring afternoon, but you're not necessarily all in Britain. And of course, our guest of honour is all the way in, where exactly are you in Australia, Simon?
I'm in Melbourne, Melbourne based.
And we have Ken McDonald. Ken, you are where exactly? Oh, you've muted yourself. Not even self-isolating, but self-muting.
I'm in Durham, North Carolina.
Do we have anybody else who is stateside just before we start?
Hi, I'm in Cleveland, Ohio.
You know what? You are a woman after my own heart because you are in the town of my favorite American football team, the Cleveland Browns.
Oh my goodness, you poor benighted soul.
I know. I like self-flagellation. That's the reason why I support the Cleveland Browns.
Pat, you're in my hometown.
That's right. We had some exchanges through the Facebook group.
Welcome again, everybody. And this is Map Corner live on Zoom. And this podcast has been running for just over a year now. So, Claire, why don't you say hello to everybody and give everybody a wave?
Hello to everybody.
There you go. So there's my podcasting wife, Claire. And on our first episode, we decided that we needed to launch things with a bang. And if you're going to do that, and fundamentally, Twitter is the lifeblood of your show. There's only one person you can go to. He's Mr. Maps on Twitter. It's Simon Kirstenmacher, who's in Melbourne in Australia.
Hi. Well, thanks for having me again. Wonderful to be here.
If we couldn't get McKay to himself on our first episode, we decided to go for you, sir.
McKay is kind of quiet on Twitter. I don't really understand why.
Simon, you're going to have to remind everybody, because I had a look at your Twitter feed just before we started, and you have, only about 170,000 followers on Twitter. But you're going to have to remind everybody, what is it exactly that you do, and why have you become so big on Twitter?
Well, in my professional life, I'm working as a demographer. I'm working as a social analyst for a small little firm, private little firm. And in the research that we did for clients, I constantly came across tons of interesting data and mostly maps that I really enjoyed. And they had nowhere to go. They were just little cutoffs from my actual research that I was doing. But I thought it would be a shame to have them go to waste. That's the that's the German in me that really likes to recycle things. So I figured I must recycle them somewhere, must share them somewhere. And I had some unused Twitter account sitting there, and I just started sharing maps. And it quite quickly, those 4 years ago, grew to quite a bit of a community there, that just a bunch of people that also like maps and data and probably like the factual information on Twitter, in their own Twitter feed, to weigh up or even out a bit the political anger that dominates the Twitter sphere normally. So it's, I just see myself as a bit of a counterweight to the normal timelines on Twitter. And I just consider it fun. So it started as just sharing the cutoffs, and now I'm putting time aside every day to, you know, to scan the map, the web for the best and most entertaining bits of maps and data that are out there.
Simon, are people sending them directly to you at this stage? Because you are like the conduit for so many other sources of maps. And I just wondered whether or not you are actively researching them still, or whether you're just inundated by people saying, please share this.
Yes, that's definitely the case. But people are actually quite respectful there. They're people who just share their own research and say, I've done this, you might find this interesting. And then they of course know that this then gets ends up on many people's timeline. But it's really helpful by now that whenever people find maps in really bizarre publications, they let me know about it. And I think that's helpful. So there are a couple of main internet sources that most people stumble across. But by now, when people tell me, share maps about really bizarre linguistic specialties. So I recently shared a map about the police cars across Brazil, which I find a just utterly bizarre, pointless bit of information. That's just the joy of it, to weigh up the really heavy, you know, genocide end of the spectrum maps with random police car maps as well.
And I suppose your skill in an understanding of mapping has really come into its own now in the current pandemic, because one of the things which has really aided our understanding of the transmission and the spread of COVID-19 is how it's been mapped. And if you're an epidemiologist, that's been absolutely key and core to combating the disease.
Oh, absolutely. And I do, and this is the thing where I'm of so many minds when I'm looking at the corona crisis. This is I'm a shocked citizen. I'm a father of a newborn, so I'm of course very worried about how things plan out in the end. There, I have older parents, surprisingly enough, who are in the main risk group of this whole thing. So there's this worried citizen that I have. As a business consultant, my firm's income is down. So lots of things that should be worrisome. But I also really enjoy this on a completely bizarre level as an intellectual riddle that is occurring in real time. And we're all trying to solve this. An issue where the web really showed its best side, that there are endless amounts of data scientists out there, of cartographers out there, that are just very happy to put their skills to some use for the public good. And they're really pushing this. If you look at the ways that all different kinds of newspapers, that private bloggers produce, is quite amazing, the level of depth of the analysis that is out there. So it's the idea that it's a global crisis with hopelessly regionalized data, but people are carrying this together. John Hopkins of University, of course, being the number one congregator of data. But it's quite fascinating to see how people try to solve this, and how over time, out of these private initiatives, we saw governments taking the lead and trying to map data more, which in Australia, where I'm based, is still a state-based issue. And so then the states over time slowly manage to align the way they collect and publish data, which then really help people to actually have an intelligent discussion about how the virus spreads. It follows the same roots, if you will, than normal population. You know, there's the old saying in cartography that most maps are just population maps in disguise. And in a sense, that's true. In a sense, we do know the entry points for people that might have been infected and how they then spread. So it's quite easy to map this out theoretically, even without data. We can, just as an intellectual concept, we can have this. But after a while, once we receive data, we can map this out in a more detailed way. And now this, very interestingly, of course, there are many privacy concerns, of course, with mapping healthcare data, essentially. But now, as of last week in Australia, we have a corona app, like many Asian countries had for quite a while, a map that you load on your phone. And it's just Bluetooth-based, so there's no geospatial data transmitted. But if you've been in the same little area as other phones, and then somebody has tagged themselves as corona positive, everybody who was long enough in their radius over the last 2 weeks or whatever it is actually gets a message and has to be tested. And that's a way of mapping data without the geospatial aspect, which is quite interesting because it is a map that we are creating, but it's a map of a social connection, of a social network, rather than a map. And that's the interesting area of data where general data visualization and the map overlap. What's a map really? And other than just mapping, visualizing any kind of data, if that makes sense.
Absolutely does make sense. So who would have actually created that app, Simon?
That is the Australian federal government, which is an issue why lots of people raised, ironically enough, on Facebook and Twitter, raised serious data privacy concerns, and in an unironic manner as well. But that's an issue that is... I'm just looking at this as a data amateur, if you will, or computer scientist amateur. But I talk to my techie friends, and the idea is if this is a map or a data collection that only collects Bluetooth data, there's absolutely nothing of interest. Like even if you were to hand this to some hacker team, it's not an interesting network data. It's way more interesting to have your social network mapped out or your purchasing behavior mapped out. You can do more interesting things with illegally acquired data than just who has been in near physical proximity with who.
That's not interesting. There's going to be a life for this. Like obviously, we're collecting this right now, and we're doing it all in a very short time space, but for the purposes of tracking and dealing with the coronavirus. But once it's collected, isn't it? And as a demographer, how do you see this kind of data that's being collected right now having a longevity for future studies for other things beyond the current purpose?
Yeah. So in this particular data, in terms of who has been in contact with whom, since the data is not linked to anything, it's utterly worthless for academic purposes, for consumer research purposes. So, and I think that's the important thing to actually get right is the issue of context. Is I would be very, very worried if my government collected my location or my social network outside of a pandemic. Mm-hmm. So I think then you have really valuable points in order to stop an app like this. But if the physical health of it's 25 million Australians, and we've been doing really well so far in managing the virus. If this can help to open up a country again, I'm actually fully in favor of this, even though you're by no means supposed to take this lightly. So I do think it's very important that we have a public discourse out there, and in particular that we hold a government accountable for data collection like this once the pandemic is over. Once there's a vaccine, which will be probably next year, God knows when. But then I really hope that everybody deletes this app again.
Yeah.
Do you have any specific maps which you can show us, which you think kind of illustrate either Australia's response to COVID-19 or the spread of the infection throughout the world? Is there anything which specifically you think this is a really good example of map or mapping?
Yeah, so when this first popped up, and I write a weekly column, so I'm constantly looking for material. You know, I jumped at the data and really tried to have good geospatial data to map. And the important thing is to realize how late this actually came in. From a global perspective, since data isn't aligned, it's not so interesting. You usually, the data, the big maps that you see just show a big bubble of the number of officially accounted for COVID-19 cases. And that's somewhat interesting. Yeah, then you see this over time. You see this pop up. You know, those animated maps that show the infections over the last couple of months. That's quite interesting to see. And when I look at those maps, you know, where you see those bubbles grow at record pace, and you see them scarily growing in Spain, in Italy, you get a bit nervous. But I'm also seeing the tiny spread of the virus across Africa, which if you look at any world map, Africa is always the area with the gray bits of no data across the continent, and by now do have to be pretty certain that the virus already sits in every country on the planet. But across Africa, this will spread eventually. Now we're talking about poorer countries with more densely located population. This can be absolutely crucial. You know, and I very much see from a global perspective that some Western countries probably prematurely are discussing opening up, freeing Wisconsin, freeing Michigan, whatever a state is being freed right now. Premature discussions there. But I'm seeing the really big shocker is still ahead of us. And this is what a world map shows me. I know if this spreads, like the benefits of globalization, if you will, the big centers where that benefited from globalization, they already were reached. And the secondary hubs, the spokes of the global urban network, they will be hit eventually. And that'll be significantly less harder to manage. So I'm pretty nervous about this. And this is what the shocks that I get when I see it. A harmless looking bubble map on some John Hopkins website.
On that slightly scary note, Simon, I think we should all take breath and have a little bit of a pause. And what I forgot to say at the start of the show is we have a quiz, folks. We have a quiz of which I've painstakingly put together through my 51 years of being on planet Earth, all of my combined knowledge of maps, mapping, flags, and the shape of countries and cities. I've thrown it all together in the last 20 minutes.
Absolutely no help whatsoever.
Well, you gave me a little bit of help. A little bit of help. So if you haven't got pencil and paper to hand, I suggest you go and get it now, because this is kind of for fun. However, on the last episode of Map Corner, I interviewed a lovely gentleman from Ordnance Survey in the United Kingdom. And they've given us not one, not two, not three, but not even four, but five access codes to get goodies from Ordnance Survey.
And might I just say that I have here my personalised Ordnance Survey map that I got for my birthday. So that normally sits on my bedroom wall.
And of course, behind me is my very own personal copy of the Map of Monday as well. So you can see that. Let's see that behind me. We're all an honest bunch of people, right? So I'm going to trust that at the end of this quiz, when I ask you what your scores are, you're going to tell me your honest answers, and the top five people will get. I will email them the access code and get your goodies from ONS. It very much is a trust-based thing, folks. So we're going to break the quiz up into a couple parts. I'm just going to read out the last four odd questions here. In Simon's honour, the first question is about Germany. How many countries does Germany border? Is it number one, 10, number two, 8, number three, 9? And you get an extra point if you feel bold enough to answer them all. So I'm going to read that question for you again. You're missing out with my lovely graphics here, folks, everybody. The question is about Germany, the land of Simon's birth. How many countries does Germany border? Is it number one, 10, number two, 8, number 3, 9, and you get an extra point if you reckon you can name them all. At the end of the show, we'll go over the answers and the correct scores so you can win goodies from Ordnance Survey. Question 2 is about Brazil. How many countries border Brazil? Number 1, 10, number 2, 11, number 3, 9, an extra point if you can name them all. I'll read that one again. Brazil, largest country in South America. How many countries does it border? Is it number 1, 10, number 2, 11, or 3, 9? And you get an extra point if you can name them all. Right. This question is about borders. Which is the most frequently crossed controlled international boundary in the world? Stress on the word controlled here, because there are open borders throughout the world. For example, the United Kingdom and the Republic of Ireland have an open border. You can just cross it willy-nilly. Is it number 1, the United States and Mexico? Number 2, China and Hong Kong? Number 3, India and Bangladesh? So I'm going to read that question again. Which is the most frequently crossed controlled international boundary in the world? Number 1, US and Mexico. Number 2, China and Hong Kong. Number 3, India and Bangladesh.
Can I just say how I love that Simon is clearly joining in with this, and the expressions of thought and concentration on his face are...
I'm taking notes.
You're entering into the spirit, Simon. I love it.
Oddities, folks. The next 3 questions are about oddities in the world. Which internationally recognized state or country has no land at all? So, which internationally recognized country has no land at all? It's recognized by the United Nations, so it's a proper state, has its own currency, has diplomatic relations with over 100 other countries, but it has no physical land. What is the name of that country? Number 2, how many time zones does Russia have from a world total of 24? So how many time zones are there in Russia, considering that the world has a total of 24? And then the last question is, which 3 countries are landlocked by just 1 other country? So which 3 countries are landlocked by just 1 other country? At the end of this show, we'll go back and check everybody's answers. But my money's on you, Ken McDonald. You seem to be the smartest man in the room. If it's not you and Simon are going to get all of these, you can stop shaking your head and waving, saying, no. It's going to be you. Simon, obviously, what you do, your day job, kind of encompasses the world of mapping. Let's imagine that COVID-19 hasn't come and ravaged the planet. Give us an example of a typical Simon Kirsten-Macker day, you know, because... as I said when we first chatted just over a year ago, you're fundamentally doing what I wanted to do as a kid. So somehow you've managed to create a career out of maps.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how I landed that job. But so in terms of what I actually do for a living, well, these days I don't go to an office anymore. So I'm just walking upstairs, which is nice and easy. But so I make my living by writing newspaper columns, speaking on stage at conferences and in boardrooms. This now stopped this part of my work. And we're now transitioning to doing way more of those presentations, at least the boardroom presentations, online via webinars. And I also do private consulting for business. And so it's always the same formula, if you will. It's apply your demographic knowledge either to a specific geographic area, that's usually a local government area that has some kind of problem, or it's some sort of industry, some sort of company that has their eye on the future, you know, future demographics and what this might mean for the dog food industry, what it might mean for security services, emergency services, they're called, You know, I'm doing doing a job next week for the International Student Housing Association in Australia. And so then you just have to look at all the population forecasts that we usually had. We then cut them back, trying to understand how COVID-19 diminishes population growth, what kind of cohorts are shrinking, how much this might mean. So there's lots of just sitting in front of my computer, just crunching numbers. We'll have tons of Zoom calls with my team. I'm not doing all this data myself. I got a little team, and then I tweet about it in between. Talk to lovely podcasts whenever anybody is willing to have me.
When Claire and I were chatting this week about what we were going to do specifically on this episode, we had an idea that everybody, we should ask people to do a little audio postcard. It's one of my favourite bits of the podcast. That might be maybe a little bit too much pressure on everyone to be wax eloquently about looking out of your window without giving anybody at least prior warning. But this is an experiment of social isolation, lockdown observation, because I can see everybody, of course, and I can see everybody's kind of domestic situation. So I'm looking at Brett W, who I believe is from Australia. So I'm going to unmute you. How are you, sir? And where exactly are you in Australia?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm just down the road from Simon, about 1 hour away from Melbourne.
Oh, where exactly is that?
Yeah, I'm about... place called Geelong. It's southwest of Melbourne, about 1 hour. Simon will know where it is.
Okay, so for us that don't know where exactly you are, describe the town, the place, the district where you are, sir.
It was a fairly industrial place. It was where Ford had their factory in Australia, that sort of thing. And yeah, a lot of people commute to Melbourne.
Gotcha. All right, so well, welcome. The person I've actually known the longest since I've been podcasting, I've been podcasting for 6 years, is Mary, and she's over in Toronto. And I can see her husband, Ashok. I saw her little son. So I've got a scene of domestic bliss over in Toronto. Say hello, Ashok.
Hello. Rohan is being trouble, so has been taken outside for a minute.
Listen, it's been great seeing your family on webcam. How's your isolation lockdown been for you, sir?
Yeah, it's pretty good. Like, we've got a lot of time together. He's full of energy, which is, like, you know, mostly lovely.
Now, this is our stand-in for our audio postcards. You're going to have to describe exactly where you are in West Toronto.
We live, sort of on the west side of town. We moved here from London, and we live in basically the same sort of neighbourhood. We used to live in Earls Court. We're in sort of around by Ossington now, and it's like there's a bit of stuff going on, but it's not the centre of town.
Well, hello, sir, and welcome to Map Corner doing Zoom. Now, I'm going on to you, Rebecca, and you've got a wonderful map behind you, as a metro map. So where exactly are you, and what is the map that we're all looking at?
So I'm in Silver Spring, Maryland, and the map behind me is the DC Metro system. So I actually live really close to one of the metro stops that's just to the north, just off this map.
How old is the DC Metro system? It's not that old, is it?
I don't know for certain. And the worst part is I bought my brother a book about it for Christmas a couple of years ago. I think it was started maybe the late 60s, early 70s. It's just some of the stations right downtown, and they're actually extending off my shoulder right here a couple of the lines further west to go to Dulles Airport. Continuously delayed, but should be opening in the next year or so.
I must admit, it's a few years since I was in Washington, but I just totally fell in love with Washington, D.C. Utterly, the center of the city is incredibly beautiful, incredibly beautiful.
Yeah, I was. I grew up in Indiana, so just next door to some of our Ohio visitors.
Well, thank you for joining us today. Now, I'm going to put you down, Mr. Ken McDonald, as one of our star listeners, because you contribute a lot. So you're in Raleigh, North Durham. Carolina. Durham.
Oh, don't
Durham.
Don't confuse Raleigh and Durham. We hate that.
Raleigh's very close. I'm very sorry. Yes. I'm very sorry. So you're in Durham, and you gave us a wonderful audio postcard a few episodes ago about the history of Raleigh and how it actually got its...
Durham.
I keep doing it. Durham and how it got its name. Just remind us where your love of mapping started, sir.
I guess my earliest memory of it would be my mother's family lived on Martha's Vineyard Island going back to the 17th century. They were some of the original settlers. And I used to go there in the summer, and I'd spent a lot of time wandering around in the salt marshes and the swamp forest around my grandmother's house. And my grandmother, I was the last of her grandchildren, and she didn't originally get that close to me. But when she noticed my wanderings, she took an interest in that, and she gave me a set of topographic maps of Martha's Vineyard with the words, "If you're on foot, it's not trespassing." So I felt like I could go anywhere. And then once I got back to Cleveland, I got all the U.S. Geological Survey maps of Northeast Ohio, and I started exploring by bicycle. I'd go on huge bike rides as far down as Kent. I was living in North Royalton. You know where that is, Pat, a suburb southwest of Cleveland. But I would go all over, 50-mile range of my house by bicycle. And from there, I suppose it was those topo maps that really got me started on mapping.
I'd personally like to thank you for all your contributions to Map Corner and to the podcast. Catherine Rowan Jones.
Oh, yes.
And we have to thank you because you've been an utter stalwart when it comes to posting things on Twitter.
Oh, thank you.
So for people that don't know exactly where High Wycombe is, it is High Wycombe where you are, isn't it?
Yes, it is, yeah. We're halfway between London and Oxford, exactly halfway, 25 miles in each direction. So High Wycombe is my adopted residence. I'm originally from Slough, where the Mars bars come from. High Wycombe is very hilly, and it only has four roads in and out in a crossroad shape. So traffic congestion is vile. It was originally a town of mills, and then it became important for furniture and woodworking because of the locally abundant timber and the established mills. There's about 250,000 people, I think, and we're just on the edge of the Chiltern Hills, which run just above us, running diagonally from southwest to northeast.
And there's me saying people won't be able to do an audio postcard off the top of their heads. That was masterful, Miss Jones. Well done.
I'm quite good at being put on the spot. So, yeah. And I'm hopeless if I rehearse. I sound stilted.
Well, do you have a background as a tour guide, Catherine?
I have limited mobility. Otherwise, it's something I might consider. Yeah. The other thing is that I used to be horrendously self-conscious about my voice, because it is rough as a badger's arsehole. but thankfully, calling into Dumpty Dum has helped me get over the hump of that. And I will now speak freely without shame.
It has to be said, everybody always remarks on Dumpty Dum how wonderful your voice is and distinct.
I know. I don't get it. I'm flattered. Yeah. I've learned to live with it and love it.
I'm going to say hello to Mick Rowworth. Where exactly are you, Nick?
It's Nick. I'm in Janet's Park, which is a new house in Italy, on the edge of Bracknell, which is a new town. I've been here 12 years. I was the first person to move in. So,
and tell us a little something about Bracknell.
Bracknell was a tiny village, and then it was one of the new towns in the 60s. And so there's loads of new houses, and now they're building more new houses around, and ours is one of the new estates they've built on the edge of the new town. So this is the newest bit.
So Bracknell is a British new town, is it?
Yeah, it was all concrete until a few years ago when they knocked it down and rebuilt it with a nice new town centre. So they were talking about it from when I built there, but they finally managed to do it.
I must admit, I'm not necessarily a lover of post-war British new towns, but you are, Claire. You love them. Tell us why new towns need to have their image re-established.
I think the problem is most of them are overflow towns for London, so they moved people out and broke up the communities, and so they never had any hearts. That's the problem with them. Janet's Bark was the newest bit. It used to be a turf farm with peacock farm. So when I first moved to Bracknell, it was all fields here where I live now. And I worked when I was working in a tower block that looked over Janet's Park. So I saw it all building from flat fields to how it is now, full of houses, like over 600 houses. So,
Andrew, where are you, sir? You've got your headset there, you're looking like Madonna, or you're working in a call centre. Which one is it?
Neither. Yes, hi everyone. Yeah, Andrew from Australia, from Adelaide, which is about 700 kilometres from Brett and Simon. Adelaide's got a population of 1.3 million. I should know that because that's my job. I'm a demographer as well. I'm with the Australian Bureau of Statistics, so that's our official statistical agency in Australia, and I'm a demographer there, being calculating populations of each part of Australia for a very long time. I think Simon would, and maybe even Brett, would use a lot of my data in their day-to-day work.
So wait a minute, we've got a whole load of kind of mapping professionals come onto our Zoom chat today.
Good to see, isn't it?
Well, I feel that you guys should be hosting this thing. And I should be just lying back and, you know, drinking a coffee and enjoying myself. And here I am sweating. So how long have you been in the industry, sir?
Oh, well, 30 years. So I went from uni to join the organisation, like your ONS over there. And, joined the demography area in 1991. So almost 30 years ago now. It's a job I love doing.
Well, I suppose it puts a certain amount of pressure on you guys if you don't get all the quiz questions right.
Yes. Yeah, you don't want to know. Yeah, I'm struggling with the borders one. I think I'm close, but yeah.
All right. Well, listen, Andrew.
Ask me about Australian borders. I'll tell you how many countries that border Australia.
Thank you for joining us today, sir. Pat, you're up next. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. There's never been a better time to be more or less retired. So our lives haven't changed terribly much. We just have to walk a little farther away from our little grandchildren when we go out for a walk. Other than that, we're doing well.
And for people that don't know, tell us something about Cleveland. Tell us one Cleveland fact, other than it's got the best football team with possibly the worst ever record.
Well, John D. Rockefeller was from here and had a great effect on this city, even though he grew to hate it. He moved to New York City and didn't care for Cleveland in his later years, but he did. Standard Oil started here, and he actually was behind building some. There's a part of Cleveland Heights and East Cleveland called Forest Hills that was kind of a company development of beautiful stone houses for Standard Oil Company people. So he had a big effect here, even though he wound up not liking it. I think they rejected his idea for some charitable idea he had. They didn't like, so he took his money elsewhere.
Well, more fool him. I will actually get to Cleveland one day when I go and see my beloved Browns. But when I do, I will send you an email beforehand, and maybe we can have a coffee beforehand.
I love that. That'd be great. Yeah.
Paul Hahn, where are you, sir? And welcome.
Hi, thank you. I'm from the Netherlands, from Groningen. It's a town in the north of the Netherlands. And I'm a GIS specialist at the university there. Maybe Simon knows me because of the part of the university I work for. That's a geodienst. So that's rug_geo on Twitter.
Yeah.
I think you've seen some tweets of ours and even retweeted several of them. So it's always nice to see. And I'm the GIS specialist and the geodata manager there.
Welcome, sir. So tell us a little something about the town where you are. If you can't look out your window, imagine you're looking out of your window. Describe it. Make us feel like we're physically there with you.
Okay. I can look out, but it's not really a nice view. But if I look the other way, on the other side of the house, I see the Martini Church. Mm-hmm. So that's the church in the center of the city. That's a really nice old church, 500 years old, really big church. Well, I also see the new building they put next to it. That's the Forum in Groningen. It's a really big, massive structure that's just revealed a couple of months ago. Yeah, the town here, it has 200,000 inhabitants, I think, of which 40 or 50,000 are students. So that's really a lot of students, and that's really nice about the city.
Well, it sounds absolutely, utterly picturesque. And thank you for joining us today, sir. So we're going to move back on to you, Simon. So we've talked to you about the industry that you work in, how you got into it, even your move to Australia. Give us some sense of the future of maps and mapping.
Well, I guess the most important change that I would have seen in GIS recently is that mapping went away from the cartographers. Mapping was a highly specialized art for centuries, and that's totally over. These simple GIS tools that are out there allow you, even if you have absolutely no clue of what you're doing, within a couple of hours, you can put decent maps together. If you are somewhat capable to operate a machine, a computer. So that's easy enough. So this is why we saw, now this is where I come in with my Twitter maps, that just this crazy explosion of people just playing with data. And if we set data free, we will just be able to harness this more, the crowd intelligence that is out there. And just to give a quick shout out to Andrew's work at the ABS, the Australian Bureau of Statistics, it's an insanely fantastic organization. Like, our Australian census is tons. We're talking country miles better than the American census. The American census is conducted every 10 years and asks, I think, 10 or 12 questions. We conduct a census in Australia every 5 years and we ask something like 65, 69 questions. The amount of cross calculations that we can do is just out of this world fantastic. And we got the next census due in a year's time again. That's always my biggest thing to look forward to. Every 5 years, I'm giddy as a kid in a candy shop when we get new census data, which is why my job in Australia is so much easier than it would be in Germany, for example, where we have, due to our ugly German history, we have very high concerns about data privacy, which is why we don't even conduct a census in Germany. And so running even the most basic analysis, what I now as an Australian think of being basic for Germany, is rather difficult. And we do have to then just rely on survey data rather than on actual counts, actual real fixed numbers. And so I am always hoping for more data being available. And this is, of course, data being used for good. I've been working lots with private companies who own insane data and who don't use it yet. And who also don't use it for good. I'm always thinking about all the cool things that I could be doing if I had access to Visa, the credit cards or MasterCard data. You could potentially map out, the consumer behaviors that are being mapped out. I'm sure some people do map this out, but this is data that is highly confidential and sits somewhere. But just from a research and knowledge perspective, this is where I'm coming at. And then for me, data concerns always come second. We'll see lots of this in the future. Is this open data, more and more data comes out, because we already see this at all levels of government and at all kind of organizations, that people are already collecting data. But this is in my job as a business analyst, you go into companies and you understand that they have tons of data sitting there and nobody's doing anything with it. It's just you collect it because, you might as well collect it. But nobody is doing anything. And then you can come in and we are at this stage where even with just rudimentary skills and insights, and I'm giving up trade secrets here, if you will, you can achieve an awful lot because you don't deal with people that need detailed help. Just the first basic steps are already incredibly helpful for people. And I'm always hoping that now with people increasingly being less scared of numbers, being less scared of data, of maps, there are just more people happy to have a go, happy to just access the data. I'm sure there are tons of young data analysts sitting within companies, large and small, local government offices, who, if they were to get their hands on the data that their employer actually has, could do an awful lot of good. And so that's actually what I'm seeing happening since we had this explosion of data science degrees popping up. So I do think that there's a big wave of insight coming at us, and particularly from the not so hyper-specialized people, which of course then leads us to the point where we really need to make sure that people are data literate. I don't want everybody at school to become a programmer. That's totally unneeded. But I want everybody to be data literate, to at least somewhat understand how to read a chart, how to ask the critical questions about the data that underlies the map that they are viewing. And then hopefully see this with either very critically, maybe they just chuck the map away, or maybe they can just, you know, read between the lines or just see the faults for what they are, and then still take an insight of the limited perfection that they're looking at.
Do you ever see maps and you think, where have they got that data from? Like, there are sometimes when I see maps on the internet and you just think, oh, that looks really interesting. And I think, well, how did they even know that stuff? And I sometimes wonder where the source is, or whether it's just been a flight of fancy.
Yeah. Ah, and that's another thing. You know, you just need to spend a couple of years in academia to actually have this hammered into your head. Name your sources. Whatever you do on the internet, if you publish a map, if you publish a chart, name the source. And if we're talking about the online world, put a bloody link to the source in there. This is just, this is not just courtesy. This is absolute a must. We can't forego those basics. You know, sometimes in Australia, you can always point to the ABS. It was probably the ABS. And then you need to go digging in the ABS. That's Australia. And of course, there's so much just weird fun data out there where we know that the data basis is rather weird. But you know, I've seen a map that mapped the most popular dog name across cities and across towns, which makes sense because you need to register your pets. And so you can just see that it's just a weird little thing. I don't know if you can read deep socioeconomic or social insights into this data. I said, that's just fun. Why not have a bit of fun?
I was looking at one you posted up this week, actually, which is the most common restaurant cuisine in each New York City zip code. So, you know, different styles of food by postcode in New York. And again, it's one of those that you look at it, it's presenting information in a really interesting way. You think it's telling you something about the place. But then
and again,
I started to think, where does that come from? And how was someone known from the name of the restaurant, what kind of restaurant it is?
Oh, you would probably just do and this is the data scraping thing. You'd go, if I wanted this question answered, you know, by zip code in Manhattan, what's the most common type of cuisine? I would go to Yelp, the restaurant review website. I would scrape the data by, they have a geolocation. They have lat long coordinates, so I can just assign each restaurant to a zip code. They come qualified. Yelp has it wrong, and Tiamos isn't actually an Italian restaurant, but it's a sushi place. I don't know. Maybe.
I admire the people who have presumably put that kind of analytical work in, that someone's taken the time to do that, you know, cross analysis.
And that's the joy. That's really the big joy of amateur cartography, of amateur data analysis, is that I have this. I'm asking myself weird questions, and I want this question answered. And if you have an ability to get the data, you just then answer this question. And because you can, you might as well put it online on Reddit, or just share it on Twitter, just because you can. And if you don't have access to this data, then you can't. More and more commonly nowadays, you can answer weird questions, which is fun.
No, and all the better for us.
Absolutely. Now my computer has decided to work the share button anyway. Let's go through the missing rounds of our quiz and we can start to wind this all up. So I'm hitting share. So here we go.
What number question is this? I've lost track.
Just put flags. That's what it is. That's the number is flags. So on this, on your screen, folks, you can see the flags of four nations. Okay, they're all linked by one thing. You get a point if you know what they're linked by, and then you get an extra point for naming each flag. I'll let you into a little bit of a clue. They're all island nations.
Oh.
Okay, so what links them all, other than island nations? That is not an acceptable answer. And you get an extra point for knowing the answer in terms of the identity, of each island nation. What are these four countries? Again, I'm expecting big things from our mapping professionals here.
Ooh.
Your professional reputation demands that you do well in this quiz.
Are you presented north upwards, just to be sure?
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That would have been mean.
That's a very good point, Claire. And I'm not that mean. So upwards is north.
Right.
And if it helps you at all of these countries are in the Northern Hemisphere, I've only just realised. Helps you at all. We will come back on to these questions, folks. All righty. Name these two cities. And here, clue, they are both Asian. Massive giveaway in one of them. The other one I was surprised by, I must admit. If you know your cities, you'll definitely get the one. One is much more easy than the other. Hence, a little bit of a clue, they're both Asian cities. Name these two mountains. And I've put clues. There are massive clues here. So obviously we're not just looking at the mountain because a mountain can just be a mountain, but where is it situated? That should give you some hint. Two mountains, what are they? What is the name of these two mountains? And then we're going to quickly go on to the questions which I gave you before. Germany, how many countries does it border? 10, 8, 9. Extra point if you can name them. Same question for Brazil. How many countries border Brazil? 10, 11, 9. Which is the most frequently crossed controlled international boundary in the world? Is it the USA, Mexico border, China, Hong Kong, India, or Bangladesh? And oddities. Which country has no land? Recognized by the UN, it's a proper country, folks. How many time zones does Russia have? From a world total of 24, which three countries are landlocked by just one country? There you go. The people with the best results will get some goodies from Ordnance Survey. Well, you'll get special codes, which you then put into their website, and then you do whatever you do with them.
So one of the things I was going to ask you, Simon, was about you recently posted a map that was a projection with Antarctica in the middle. I was wondering about whether obviously that also kind of puts Australia more in the middle of a map, where it usually sits somewhere around the edge. And I didn't know if you had any sort of favorite projections and things that are, you know, a different way of seeing the world, not just in terms of the projection, but the kind of the locus of the map.
So this is a very unpopular opinion. I really enjoy simple Mercator maps simply because I'm working a lot with print. And if you want to show a world map, you need a small Africa and a large Europe in order to make stuff visible. It's just that simple. And I'm also occasionally, do we have any New Zealanders in here? No, we don't, sadly enough. I'm also very understanding of people who cut off New Zealand from maps. Simply, this is again for print, because if you print, you have a very small bit of room allocated and you just want to zoom in as much as possible on a world map to show relevant data. And quite often New Zealand is not relevant for whatever you're showing. So you just cut it off. So I'm actually okay with that. Just from a print and newspaper perspective that I'm dealing with every week. And yeah, that's the bad confessions. But I'm a big fan of all those bizarre, beautiful projections that are simply nice to look at. No, and there's this nice algorithm that somebody wrote where you actually write the specific map projection around the data that you have. So you'd use this, for example, for the journey of the MS Beagle, Darwin's journey. So you just see the journey. If you just imagine his route that he took across the world, and you calculate a specific map projection so that the route can be as straight as possible. Yeah. So you can actually just show the route, because that's actually what you look at. It's bizarre. It really hurts your brain to look at first, but after a while it makes sense, and it's just a really nice map projection that you just need once for this bizarre map. And of course you can just show it on a random on any kind of map, but it's just this extra little bit fun and special.
I've seen a really nice one where it prioritizes the ocean above the land. And there's a way of sort of showing the world sort of where the oceans take prominence. And I think that's also a really interesting way of looking at the world, because humans tend to live on land and therefore we've prioritized land masses over oceans. Oceans seem peripheral, but actually the other way around, it can be a really interesting way.
I keep forgetting his name, but there's a lovely Dutch cartographer who created a really fun, he just creates weird fun map projections. He created the dolphin projection. So he just figured, okay, so if I'm a dolphin, I really am looking only at the ocean. So it must be an ocean-centric map, and it must be flipped because I'm the dolphin. So I look from the world from the bottom up, which of course is kind of just a silly way of playing around it. So it's a flipped ocean-centric world map. And he did the same thing with I forgot what he was calling it, the worm map, like how a worm would look at the world. And it's just, you just play with those ideas, and you have a couple of data points that you can play with if you create your own map projection. And you know, it's of course not good for anything, but not everything needs to be good for anything.
Spot on. Claire, do you have another question for Simon before we give the answers to the quiz?
No, but I'm wondering if Paul knows the name of the Dutch person who made the dolphin map, because he looked sort of very excited at the point we mentioned that.
I think Frans Blok, but I'm not sure.
That's it.
Okay.
That's it.
I think I heard it once, but yeah.
Yeah, well done. You get a bonus point for the quiz.
Well earned that bonus point.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found. That project manager I could never seem to hire? And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Okay, so let's quickly go through the quiz answers. And we need, it's going to be the top five scores, basically. You'll basically email me and you will receive the access codes from our good friends at Ordnance Survey. So we are looking at four flags. The top one is the top left is the Seychelles. Then top right is Sri Lanka. Bottom left is Madagascar. And then we have the Maldives. What links these four countries? The Indian Ocean. Yeah. So a maximum of 5 points available there. These countries, top left, Simon, can you hazard a guess? Turkey. All right, it's Turkey.
Looks like that, yeah.
And to the right, so top right, a little bit harder. That is Kazakhstan.
Right.
Now, bottom right. If you know anything about me, I'll try and get this proud island nation into just about everything that I do. That is Jamaica. And if you were a crow and you were flying due south, well, not quite due south, maybe south, southeast from the island of Jamaica, you'd get to the next country, which is bottom right, which is Venezuela. Okay. On to our name the city round. First city on the left, worth 1 point, is Tokyo. Now, the city to the right. Does anybody know this? No, everyone's shaking their heads. That's Beijing.
Well, I guessed it was China. Do I get half a point?
No. I must admit, with that big building, I would have put this down as a Dubai type place. You know, it reeks of new money and thrusting. Yeah. Modernist architecture. I would have said Dubai. Okay, and then on to our name that mountain round. Anybody want to hazard a guess? Wave if you think you know this one. Okay, Pat, you look like you're about to wave.
Well, the one on the left is Kilimanjaro, I believe.
Absolutely.
I have no idea of the one on the right.
The one on the right is Tabletop Mountain in Cape Town. Oh, yeah, our Dutch friend is nodding away there. So you got that one. Well done, sir.
Does Table Mountain count?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We'll give you that. We'll give you that. That's our Name That Mountain round. And then Germany borders 9 countries.
Ah.
Now, Mr. Kirsten Macker, I'm going to you for you to name all the countries that Germany.
Do think I have this, and I've been to almost all of them. We start with Denmark. We go to the Netherlands, Belgium, Luxembourg, Switzerland, Austria. The Czech Republic is now called Czechia. I don't know about what
you pronounce it. Czechia.
And we have Poland. I don't know how many that are. Well, you said it.
Nine. Spot on. Utterly perfect. Well done. So you get 1 point for guessing that correctly, that it's nine. And then you get another point for getting all of the countries. So a maximum of two in the Germany round. Brazil borders 10 countries.
Yay. That was a lucky guess.
Does anybody want to have, can anybody rattle through the list of countries that Brazil borders? Unmute your mic and go for it. Okay.
Off the top, right? There's like Guyana and places like that along the top.
Guyana, Suriname, and then French Guyana. Doing this from memory, then you've got Venezuela, Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, Bolivia, Paraguay.
Ecuador doesn't.
No.
Ecuador doesn't. Ecuador doesn't sound right.
You know what?
No, it doesn't.
You know what? You're right. Historically, it did. It seeded. You're completely right. But originally, Ecuador did. So Bolivia, Paraguay, Argentina, and Uruguay.
Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay, Bolivia, Peru, that's five. And then up there, I'm sure up there, on top there, are the small ones that I don't know.
Yeah, French Guyana, Suriname, Guyana, and Venezuela and Colombia.
Colombia, that's it.
There you go. Then there you go. Yeah. But thank you for pulling me up about Ecuador. So there you go. But historically, Ecuador did border.
That is impressive niche knowledge there, Roy Field.
Well, I love political maps.
I know.
And then, which is the most frequently crossed controlled international boundary in the world? It's number one, it's the US and Mexico. Mm. So I only discovered that today after doing a bit of a Google on borders and open borders. And of course, the EU is a massive open border. Then we have the United Kingdom and Ireland have an open border, and like India and Nepal have an open border. There are many open borders throughout the world, but the most frequently crossed controlled one is the USA and Mexico. And I've been in that border queue four times, and it is not pleasant at all. Though it has to be said, the very first time I crossed over, we want to go from the United States to Mexico, easy peasy Japanese. Right. The Mexicans just like, come on in. That's fine. It's going the other way. The Americans are like, no. And when the first time when I traveled from the United States to Mexico, the border guard, presuming I was going to be an African-American, I gave him my passport and he went, oh, he looked at it and he saluted and said, God save our gracious queen, God save her. Welcome to Mexico. Come on in, sir. He was a right card, as we say. And then the last question, oddities. Which country has no land? The Sovereign Military Order of Malta. Did anybody get that? I'll just accept Order of Malta. Did anybody get that right? No? Okay.
I should have known that because I did a historical study as part of my St. John Ambulance training when I was about 10. It was probably a part of that. I remember the dandaging better, if I'm honest.
It is a weird oddity. They have an elective prince. It has no territory. I went to Malta 2 years ago, and you see the building, but it's not actually consecrated land of the Military Order of Malta. It's very peculiar. It's a hangover from the Crusades. The Crusaders had sovereign land in the Holy Land, and when they're expelled by the Arabs, various Christian kings gave them sovereign territory in Cyprus and then in Malta, and then Napoleon comes and kicks them out, but they still hold this diplomatic status ever since. So there you go. Number two, how many time zones does Russia have in a world total of 24? 11 time zones in Russia. You get a point for that.
Which country has the most time zones?
Russia.
No, technically France.
with all of their Pacific.
They have 30.
That's a good one, Simon.
Well done, sir. Actually, I almost asked a question about France and about which South American country does France share a border with, which it would have been Ticara, Suriname, or Brazil. But I thought that's a little bit tricky. But yes, but well done. They're all overseas departments of France, not territories, aren't they? Yeah. Which three countries are landlocked by just one country? Lesotho, that is South Africa, San Marino, Italy, and the Vatican City, which is also Italy. I'm going to go through and ask you all individually, just unmute your microphones if you are muted. I'm going to go through and starting with you, Claire, how many did you get?
I got four, which is a bit dismal, isn't it, really?
Surely you're missing a zero. They mean 40. Surely.
No.
14. Okay, no. So Claire's got four. I don't think you're
going to play four that. Kids.
Simon, how many did you get, sir?
I'm struggling counting.
Oh, God, is that...
That many.
Yes. No. I just don't understand the counting.
I'm going to come back to you then, Simon. Pat, how many do you have?
I'm not even bothering to count, but I think about four.
All right, Pat's got four, same as Claire. Let's just go through this list very quickly. Paul, unmute yourself, sir. How many did you get?
I came for 12.
Yay, go! Yay.
All right, 12 Yay. Is pretty good so far. And Andrew, how many did you get, sir?
I can't count either, but I got around 10 or 12. I was really proud I got the Brazil one, all those countries, but the Germany one, I forgot France. Anyway, I'll say 11 for the record.
Okay.
It's about 11.
All right. Yep. All right, Andrew, you're on 11. And Nick, how about you, sir?
Yeah, I got 9.
Okay, you're in the line for some goodies so far, sir. Ken McDonald.
Do we get 1 point per landlocked country, or is it just one if we got them all?
You know what? I'm going to, because it was one question, I think you get one if you get all three. That's a pretty good point. I didn't make that clear.
In that case, I only got 7.
All right. Well done, Ken. Rebecca, how about you?
I have 4.
4. 4 seems to be quite a popular figure. Ashok, how many did you get, sir?
So what was the right answer for Brazil in the end?
10 countries.
It was still 10. 10 even.
Ten.
Okay. 10. So we got 6.
6. Okie dokie. Catherine Rowan-Jones in High Wycombe.
4.
All the best people get 4, Catherine.
Yeah, the mode. The one that occurs most often.
Exactly. And then Brett... down there in Australia, how many do you get, sir?
I actually got 16.
Oh,
wow!
Round of applause. Well done, Brett. I think that is Brett. I think that was Ken. I think that was Paul and Andrew. If you could email me. And did I miss anybody else out?
Yeah. Well, maybe Nick.
I think you're missing Simon.
I'm now giving myself, after my accounting system, I'm giving myself 8.
Oh, right,
yeah. How many did you get, Nick? Nick, how many did you get?
I got 7 after deducting 2 for, because I got 3, and I counted as 3.
Well,
so it's 7,
it doesn't feel right that our eminent person, our guest of honour, gets a prize. So I'm taking the prize away from you, Simon, and I'm giving it to Nick. Nick, if you... If everybody who has got the most amount of points would email me at royfield@gmail.com, that's royfield@gmail.com, I will give you the access codes for OS and you can go crazy with whatever digital goodies they're offering you. I think that's us just about done, folks. Claire, is there anything you'd like to say to wrap things up?
It's just really lovely to see everyone. Just to reiterate, I'm still looking to be adopted by Ken McDonald, just putting that out there. And it's lovely to see people and feel like we've got some faces to put to the names in the Map Corner community. So, let's keep meeting over on the Facebook group and keep listening to the podcast.
No. I'd like to echo the comments and the good wishes of my podcasting wife. And I think we should all do a rousing round of applause for our guest of honor, Mr. Simon Kosomaker. Thank you, Simon.
Thank you, Simon. It's been
really
great.
Thank you, Simon.
Thanks for having me, everyone. Much appreciated.
Thank you very much.
I will put this show up in a few days' time on YouTube so you can see yourself in 3D, Technicolor, all moving around. And, of course, this will be the next podcast that we'll put out. We'll put out just the audio version as well. Nice to see you there, Mary. I can see you. Can I just like the hello? Woo. Please, if you do anything at all to do with Map Corner, go on to a podcatcher of your choice and write us a little bit of a review and be kind. Be kind and write, give us 5 stars and write something nice and positive. Lovely seeing you all. If this lockdown goes on for too much longer, you never know, we might have to do this again. I think it's a lovely way of getting us all together and having a little bit of fun. Take care, stay safe, everybody, and we'll see you all again soon if the lockdown continues. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
That's great. Thank you.